Sup, you beautiful bastards. You're watching the Philip DeFranco Show. Hope you've had a fantastic Wednesday evening, Thursday morning. And if not, just remember, there's always tomorrow, though that could also be just as bad, if not worse. But lucky you, for the next little bit, I'll distract you with the news of the day, so let's just jump into it.
Starting with...
in today's What the Actual Fuck is Going On news, let's talk about the situation with Elisa Giordano, who, if you're not familiar with, is a singer, model, writer, and IRL streamer who worked on the Howard Stern Show back in the 2010s, among other high-profile gigs. And this week, on Monday, she flipped on her YouTube live stream from Palm Beach, Florida, to talk about some terrible news, saying that her boyfriend, who goes by the name Squirrel, that he's been cheating on her for the past who knows how long. They're throwing out several different numbers, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years, 8 years, it's really unclear. But either way, she somehow gets a hold of his keys, his wallet, and most importantly, his phone. So she calls her friend and she begins reading some of the texts that he sent Sarah, the woman that he's allegedly been cheating with.
All the blood rushed to my mushroom tip, zero left for brain per usual. I'm gonna buy you a burka. He told me she meant nothing to him. And that's exactly what he told her about me, the same thing. I'm just attached to him because I'm like afraid I'm not going to meet anybody else. I hate men like this.
So seemingly a messy situation, one where people would understandably be upset. But rather than just being like, hey, I'm going to break up with a cheating douchebag today, she straps on her seatbelt, she kicks the car into drive, and she calls Sarah.
Hi, is this Sarah?
You know, at this point, you have people saying, you know, to her credit, Elisa stays calm and cordial, treating Sarah as a fellow victim of Squirrel's duplicity. So this, as she got some criticism for driving while live streaming, talking to Sarah and reading texts off of her phone all at the same time, which is obviously very dangerous, but not nearly as dangerous as what she alleges Squirrel did.
It's actually against the law what he did. He texted nudes of you to me.
Notably, later on, she seems to say that she just found the nudes on his phone, so it's unclear exactly what happened there. Also, another thing she got criticism for was seeming to go along with racist comments that she claims that Squirrel made.
And then I said, oh, who's Sarah? And he's like, oh, no, I don't like her. She's a dumb Mexican.
Who's the woman you called earlier?
That's Sarah, his girlfriend, his Mexican girlfriend. Hates Mexicans, by the way.
So there you have people saying she doesn't seem to actually agree with that racism, right? She's just quoting him. But whatever the case, she decides to go on a shopping spree and she drives to a mall. They're threatening to use Squirrel's credit card and then flashing his money to the camera. And so at some point, Squirrel apparently catches wind that all of this is happening. And he apparently gets a cop to intercept Elisa in the parking lot. But the officer ordering Elisa to give him back his phone and keys and pointing to him a short distance away.
There's nothing violent happening.
But he just wants his phone. So
he's
just
getting his phone.
Okay,
thanks.
But then, I shit you not, barely 25 seconds later, this happens.
I called Sarah, you Sorry.
Do you want to go to jail?
Not really, no.
And so she gets into the car, and then why is this happening? He gets in as well. And at first, it's just awkward. But to make it even weirder, he's sitting there and just listening to live donations like this.
James donated $5. What a cheating snake.
Then they just drive it in silence as Here I Go Again by Whitesnake's playing on the speakers. So eventually they turn that off and they take some calls from live stream viewers. And it goes exactly how you'd expect.
Where's your chin, dude? Where did it go? You look like an adult baby.
And so that goes on for a while with Elisa saying how she posted Sarah's phone number, home address, full name, and Venmo account on a Discord server. And then just adding fuel to the fire, they get Sarah back on the phone. But then, and here's the big thing, I can't show this in today's show, but at different points, Elisa starts punching and slapping Squirrel in the face and body. And after one strike that he claims nearly broke his nose, he says,
next time you f***ing touch me, I'll f***ing dick you.
But then she tries to hit him again, and so he yanks her by the hair, commanding her to pull over, repeatedly calling her a dumb C-word while she screams and blares the horn, calling for help. And then with one fistful of her hair still in his grip, he pushes her out of the car. But then apparently someone called the police because according to TMZ, officers then showed up, watched the video, and decided Elisa was the aggressor, with them arresting her for simple domestic battery and giving us this very unhappy mugshot, with her afterward telling the outlet that she was sorry for her actions and said that it was a moment that she's not proud of. You know, the law is one thing, those cops' judgment is another, and your opinion on this is something else. And so with everything you've seen and heard, I gotta pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts here? And then, entertainment drama news, Rihanna has found herself in the midst of a controversy. Also, when I say found herself, I mean, I imagine this was all intentional. She just did a photo shoot with Interview Magazine where she dressed as a sexy nun with bold makeup on. She also posted a video really playing up the sexualization aspect there, with it seeming to reference this pew boy poster art. And so with that, you know, obviously you had her fans saying she ate, she slayed, she served, she left no crumbs. But this is, you also had a lot of other people calling the photos a mockery of Christianity, saying that it's blatantly disrespectful of the religion, people writing things like, we as Christians need to get serious and boycott this type of nonsense, and don't you guys get tired of making excuses for disrespecting religious garments, or is it only allowed when it's tied to Christianity? Or with a lot of people saying, hey, why don't you do something for Muslims next? So I'm also noting that apparently there's been some discourse already online about sexualizing nuns being kind of in lately. So with this Rihanna cover, you had some people saying things like, y'all, I don't want to stir the shit pot too much, but we have to stop sexualizing groups of people whose whole purpose in life is to not be sexualized. But some also bring in the mothers shouldn't do sexy things outrage into the pylon. You know, what was interesting, and it seems often the case these days, depending on where you went online, it was just like drastically different reactions, people in different echo chambers. Because you'd go one place online and people were outraged, other places online, they're like, shut up. Saying things like, I'm sorry, but you bitches been sexy nuns every Halloween since 2004 and Rihanna is where y'all draw the line at? Lord Jesus, please cover your ears when these people speak their hypocrisy. Right, and people also noting that art and media taking provocative jabs at the Catholic Church is not a new thing. But with this little messy mess, I gotta ask you, where do you land on this? What are your thoughts here? And then, y'all, we've got Boeing back in the news, and I love how I found out about this news. This morning, ass crack at dawn, I look at a text from a buddy and they're like, did you see the new Boeing drama? And I was like, Boeing drama? Did Boeing just get in the Kendrick Lamar Drake beef? What happened? And then I looked into it and I saw that the Boeing drama was that a Boeing whistleblower, who was an engineer who spent 10 years at the company and who worked on the 787 Dreamliner, right, Sam Salaport, he says that Boeing failed to follow its own procedures for ensuring pieces of the plane's fuselages were properly fitted and fastened together, with then the result of that being that the planes could just break apart mid-flight after thousands of trips. Which, yeah, I guess would be dramatic. Some might even describe it as a bit much. And, you know, I should also say with this that the 787, that's actually the first airliner that makes heavy use of so-called composite materials rather than just straight up metal. And so because of that, it's normal that we have questions about how these materials will hold up to the long-term stresses of flight. But notably, and as mentioned before, Salapour's allegations have to do specifically with Boeing's conduct, with them saying that the company took shortcuts to meet production targets and describing cases where workers placed excessive stress on major airplane joints to make it look like parts fit together properly, which he says is a problem because that could cause deformation of the material and eventually lead to its earlier than expected failure. And on top of all that, he says that he's faced retaliation after raising his concerns with the company, and that retaliation including being threatened with physical violence from a supervisor. And then ultimately, he says that after being ignored and left out of key meetings, he was involuntarily reassigned to work on the company's 777 aircraft program, where very notably, he says, again, he saw workers forcing misaligned parts to fit together and even jumping on parts to make them fit together. Because apparently, we are building planes the same way I have to try and pack my wife's suitcase. You know, it was only after all this that Salapour took his concerns to the FAA, with a spokesman for the agency confirming that it was investigating the allegations, but not providing further comment. But with this, Boeing, for their part, they've of course denied all wrongdoing, saying in a statement that it has full confidence in the 787 Dreamliner, that Salapour's claims are inaccurate, and also saying that the planes have been subject to rigorous engineering examination under FAA oversight. And to that point, Boeing also said that it identified concerns about the proper fitting and joining of fuselages back in 2020, with the FAA approving a fix in 2022 that allowed the company to continue production after stopping for nearly 2 years. But, and this could be a big thing, according to spokesperson Paul Lewis, the company could only determine that there was no immediate safety issue, with him adding that the analysis to determine if there may be a long-term fatigue concern, that's ongoing, saying they weren't rushing the team because it wouldn't be an issue for, quote, many years to come. You know, we're gonna have to wait to see what comes from this, because obviously this is not the first time we talked about Boeing troubles. They had doors popping off mid-flight, Department of Justice launching a criminal investigation. There was also that other Boeing whistleblower, John Barnett, who had raised concerns about manufacturing practices, who was then later found dead after reportedly taking his own life. There was also recently that engine cover that fell off and struck the wing flap. And so all of this is why Congress is getting involved, with the Senate Subcommittee on Investigation set to hold a hearing with Salapour next week. With that, Senator Richard Blumenthal, who chairs that subcommittee, pointing to the, quote, repeated shocking allegations about Boeing's manufacturing failing, and saying that he wants the public to hear from the engineer firsthand.
Boeing is putting profits and production speed ahead of quality and safety.
And then, so for my fellow meat lovers out there looking to save time in the kitchen, the fantastic sponsor of today's show, Just Meats, has a delicious time saver for my household. You know, I'm talking premium grass-fed beef with no artificial colors or flavored, pre-seasoned and pre-cooked, delivered to your door. You can feed yourself and your family in minutes. And it's also super easy for us because we only have to add the sides. The main meal is ready in mere minutes. You know, I started with what they call the most popular meat box, which is a variety of meats like smoked Texas brisket, Hawaiian teriyaki chicken, pulled pork, and more. more. You can really mix up your menu for the week. Also, I will say the brisket is currently my favorite, but what's really cool about Just Meats is that items like their new roasted diced chicken or the ground chuck, they're perfect for topping off nachos, right? These proteins, right, they elevate your favorite snack into a meal. Plus, Just Meats practices safe sourcing of meat from local ranches in the Rocky Mountain region, ensuring humane treatment and feeding of animals and maintaining optimal temperatures through their carefully insulated method of shipping. So if you're hungry for some goodness, just go click that link in the description and use code DeFranco to get $15 off your first purchase. And by the way there, that deal is stackable with other deals on the site. And then, if I told you that Kraft's Lunchables wasn't exactly the healthiest thing in the world, you'd be like, oh, cool, thank you for the breaking news, Phil. But unfortunately enough, there is actually breaking news around how bad Lunchables are. And I don't just mean with like the extremely high levels of sodium it has. Instead, according to research by Consumer Reports, there's a good amount of lead and cadmium in there, both of which cause long-term problems that have a tendency to build up in the body after repeated exposure, which could be the case if you were eating something, let's say, as a daily lunch replacement. And that's even more true for children because, you know, they're smaller and they need less of an exposure to start seeing problems. And it turns out, like, we're not talking about some lead and cadmium. It's like a weirdly large amount for how small a Lunchable is, right? A single 3.2 ounce turkey and cheddar cracker Lunchable, those have 74% of California's level of allowed lead for a child 4 to 8 years old. And while yes, that is technically the daily allowance, that is just one thing they are eating in a whole day, leaving very little room if they're getting exposed to the stuff in another way. And again, this is in addition to the things that everyone's known about, like the sodium, which once again, just a single Lunchable has 49% of your daily recommended intake, which are just extreme numbers for something that makes up just 15% of a child's recommended daily caloric intake. So if a child gets more than half of the daily limit for lead from so few calories, there's little room for potential exposures from other foods, drinking water, or the environment. And on top of that, you had researchers warning that some of the foods that are common in Lunchables, such as many ultra-processed meats, have links to cancers, which led them to warn that we don't think anybody should regularly eat these products, and they definitely shouldn't be considered a healthy school lunch. But with all this, on the other side, as you'd expect, Kraft's out there fighting for their Lunchables, with them saying, among other things, they have issues with how things are being presented, saying many of our Lunchables products are a good source of protein, offering nutrients through meats and cheeses. We've taken great steps to improve the nutrition profile of Lunchables, including recently unveiling Lunchables with fresh fruit and reducing the sodium in all Lunchables crackers by 26%. But I'm also going on to argue that just because something is labeled as ultra-processed doesn't mean it is inherently worse. You know, with part of their argument being that they add extra nutrients to it and thus it's actually better overall for the consumer. And then going on to add, the classification of food should be based on scientific evidence that includes an assessment of the nutritional value of the whole product, not restricted to one element such as a single ingredient or the level of processing. There's also concerns about the sample size, right? They only tested 12 store-bought Lunchables, which is enough to see a pattern, but it's also a pretty small sample size. But you know, with that said, it hasn't stopped the researchers from starting a petition with 12,000 signatures so far to remove the products from the National School Lunch Program. And then, we gotta talk about Arizona. You know, it's a state that'll always have a special place in my heart. It's where I proposed to my wife. It's a state that I think is largely filled with fantastic people, which is kind of amazing. Like, if I lived in a place where the sun was actively trying to murder me most of the year, I'd probably be in more of a shitty mood. But the big news that we've gotta talk about with Arizona is that they have learned how to time travel.
Great Scott.
I know, this is heavy.
At least legislatively. Because yesterday, Arizona reinstated an abortion law that was first created 50 years before Arizona was even a state. From a time before women could vote, and even the prospect of the three-fifths compromise for a lot of people was maybe a little bit too much. But that's also because the Civil War was actively playing out. But then after the law got reinstated, a lot of stuff happened. So let's break it down. Because everything first kicked off yesterday when the Arizona Supreme Court, which is composed entirely of Republican appointees, ruled 4-2 to uphold an 1864 law that bans nearly all abortion. This including medication abortion from the moment of conception. And the only exception being when the mother's life is in danger and not in cases of rape or incest. And also with this, providers who administer abortions not only could face fines, but a prison sentence of 2 to 5 years. Right, and all this marked a major change from Arizona's current abortion law, which notably was enacted 2 years ago after Roe was reversed, and it banned the procedure after 15 weeks. But, and it's one of the key things here, that 15-week ban didn't explicitly repeal the 1864 law. And that's something the state Supreme Court justices pointed to in their decision, noting that the 2022 law also didn't establish a right to abortion. And because the reversal of Roe took away the federal right to abortion, the Arizona Supreme Court argued that there was nothing in federal or state law that prevented the 1864 ban from taking effect. But the first thing I'll say with this is that the law is not going to take effect immediately, because as a part of their decision, the judges put the case on hold for 2 weeks so a lower court could hear arguments about the law's constitutionality. And a separate ruling in another case requires the state to wait 45 days after the Supreme Court decision to enforce the law. So we have abortion providers saying they will continue performing the procedures through May. But also, another big thing is it's unclear what enforcement will actually look like. And that's because the state's attorney general, who's a Democrat, and by the way, barely won her last election, with the situation really highlighting how every single vote matters and how every election matters. She has said she will not prosecute doctors who continue to provide abortions. But one, that'll likely set up legal battles, and even then, two, local prosecutors could still decide to enforce a law in their jurisdictions. But also, regardless of the legal nitty-gritty here, it's very possible that this could be overturned outside the legal system, right? Because a state legislature could pass a law overturning it. And then there's the ongoing effort to get an initiative on the ballot this November that would enshrine abortion rights. And specifically, that measure would change the state constitution to protect abortion access until fetal viability, which is about 24 weeks, and that's the standard originally set under Roe. With already organizers saying they have exceeded the 400,000 signatures required to get on the ballot, right? And successfully doing that would be an absolutely enormous thing, because directly putting abortion on the ballot this fall would give this even more weight in the election that it already has. And with Arizona also being such a big state and deciding who the next president's going to be, I mean, there's a lot at play here. Right? In 2020, Biden only won with 11,000 votes, which has made it a key target for Trump to flip this fall, which is also why we've likely seen tons of Republicans quickly moving away from this decision. Without even including Carrie Lake, the infamous pro-Trump election denier running for Senate in Arizona, with her calling for the ruling to be overturned despite the fact that she literally praised the law in the past, even having gone as far as to call it great, with former Republican Governor Doug Ducey and others kind of falling in line here. And I say falling in line because we now have Trump even himself saying this ruling went too far. But with that, we've also seen many condemning his words as insincere, or because as we head into the general election, he's not openly endorsing a federal abortion ban, arguing that the matter should be left to the states and saying, you know, we need to make sure we win elections.
You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections to restore our culture and, in fact, to save our country, which is currently, and very sadly, a nation in decline. Always go by your heart, but we must win. We have to win.
But meanwhile, he's still the candidate that every time he's in front of a microphone reminds everyone that he's the reason that Roe was overturned.
Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights, especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and, in fact, demanded be ended. Roe v. Wade.
But I guess the main point being there's a big mess in Arizona. A lot of this we're going to see play out in the lead up to and then in November, and we'll have to wait to see what happens.
And then Russia has invaded the United States of America with tumbleweeds.
We woke up and our front yard was covered.
Boom, it was 10 foot high, you know, coming in the garage. Oh, close that door.
Sky high. Couldn't get out.
Looked like a herd of cows coming.
We still can't walk anywhere.
Oh, it's horrible.
You know, Ralph Waldo Emerson once said that a weed is a plant whose virtues have not been discovered. But he was wrong. They suck. I'm against hate in most its forms, not against weeds. Right? Especially because tumbleweeds, technically called Russian thistle, they're a highly invasive species that have just pretty much no redeeming qualities whatsoever. Right? They steal moisture and nutrients from the soil that other more valuable plants need to survive. In fact, I once heard someone call them the Taliban of the plant world, which, holy shit, that's the most dramatic way you could describe that. But this is because they harbor destructive insects and diseases. And they also hurt livestock, and their sharp thorns get mixed in with animal feed, as well as contaminating bales of hay and interrupting crop fields and filling irrigation ditches. They also clog up machines and farm equipment, and you get the point. They are basically just a worthless nuisance in every conceivable way. But, you know, with all this, have you ever asked yourself the question, well, how did they even get here? And if they're so horrible, why haven't we eradicated them already? And well, to answer that first question, I need to first dispel some of Hollywood's lies. Or because of Westerns, tumbleweeds have become an iconic part of the wild, wild west, a symbol of desolation, rolling past empty saloons, across barren roads and through open plains, always mirroring the rootlessness of the brooding gunslinger drifting from ghost town to ghost town in search of a purpose that doesn't exist. But that's just pure tumbleweed propaganda. These rolling skeletons, they only became common in the US as the Old West was coming to an end, with them actually first arriving in 1873, probably hiding among flax seeds brought to South Dakota by Russian immigrants. And from there, they just spread, taking about two decades to deposit their seeds across the American West, as well as pretty much every state except Florida and Alaska today. And in doing so, it gave itself the award for one of the fastest plant invasions in the history of the United States. And then as far as that second question, like, why are they still here? Why have we not gotten rid of them? Well, the answer is because they're nearly unstoppable. And specifically, it has to do with the way that they tumble. Right? So first, a tiny seedling plants itself in the soil, with it then in the spring sprouting into living green shrubs that soak up rainwater and grow, even sporting some flowers that you might consider not completely shitty. And like any normal plant, they die in the chilly months of fall and winter when the soil dries up. But it's only after that sweet kiss at death that the real fun begins. Because then, this lifeless husk breaks off from its roots, letting the wind take it wherever it chooses to blow. And all the while, it's shaken off up to 250,000 seeds that'll repeat the cycle in faraway lands. So unsurprisingly, wherever they go, havoc follows. Right? because they're so thorny. They stick to everything and never let go, including with each other, right? They cling together, forming giant tumble monsters that reach 10 or 20 feet tall. And then all it takes is one good windstorm, and these things are smothering entire towns, wrapping around houses, blocking up streets, burying cars and trucks and trailers, piling up in front of windows and doors and sidewalks and driveways and everything else, including closer to you, sticking to clothing, carpets, digging their claws into your skin, right? While you've never maybe experienced this, people have even woken up to find themselves trapped inside their homes because they're submerged in tumbleweed. And every year, there are even several traffic accidents because these things just roll across the road. But even with everything that I've said, we haven't touched on the way that they're most dangerous. Wildfires. Right, tumbleweeds are incredibly flammable, and their light, airy structure lets them burn intensely and rapidly, which is bad on its own, but it's even worse if a lot of them bunch up together, creating a massive dry vegetation. Not to mention that if pieces break off and they accumulate near other flammable stuff like wood fences and houses, that's not a good thing. Right, and so with this, at this point, maybe you're thinking, okay, Phil, you convinced me. Tumbleweeds suck. But what can we actually do about them? Well, if you get them when they're still rooted and alive, a lawnmower will teach them a lesson they'll never forget. Notably, it'll likely have already produced seeds, which means they may just grow back next year. So alternatively, there's herbicides like Weed Killer, but of course, that's not so good for the environment. Otherwise, some people just say burn them. Though understand, I am not saying start fires on or off your property. I don't personally know you, and I don't know if you should be trusted with fire. Honestly, I know more people I don't trust with fire than do trust with fire. But even that, while morally satisfying, that can be dangerous or pollute the air if you're not careful. So very often, people do one of two things. Either rake them off your property, push them into the street and hope they become someone else's problem, or they round them up, pack them into giant bins and dumpsters, and they take them to a landfill. Also, aside from individual residents, the government can take more systematic action to combat it, namely by identifying so-called biological control agents, right? Basically natural enemies of tumbleweed from its native ecosystem, which means going back to ground zero, southeastern Russia and western Siberia. Except the challenge there is to find something that's effective at killing tumbleweed, but doesn't threaten other native species. And so far, we've kind of just been shit out of luck. Though scientists are testing some candidates, which is why for now, we've just got to learn to live with these prickly little assholes, which for some apparently means finding useful purposes for them, like not setting fires on their lawn, instead compacting tumbleweeds into substitute fireplace logs, for example. Or some have even turned things into like functional tumbleweed chandeliers. But 99% of the time, they're nothing but desecrated, wiry, coiled up carcasses of highly mobile and prickly spines. And at its core, it just has a dark Russian heart. They're essentially Vladimir Putin. Yeah, maybe that's the point of this story. If you don't randomly hate tumbleweeds as much as I do, you support Vladimir Putin. But the other 99% of the time, they are just worthless and horrible. But thank you for listening to my new segment, Random Things Phil Hates. And then finally, today we have commentary, though I gotta start by saying congratulations to Christina D and Kylie, because they're two of the latest winners of our weekly $500 giveaway towards any available tickets on SeatGeek. Because if you missed it, SeatGeek and the Daily Dip are now giving away up to $1,000 in tickets every week just for a few more weeks, so you definitely don't want to miss out. Especially because entering couldn't be easier. You just add code PDS to your SeatGeek app profile for a chance at the weekly $500 prize, no purchase necessary. $1,000 prizes are available to Daily Dip subscribers who add code PDS newsletter to double the entries and winnings. So yeah, thank you, and you're welcome. But as far as yesterday's comments, we had Daniel Valdez saying, is the Australian dad worthy of Phil's first ever Banff and Don't Be Stupid combo award? Because that dad yesterday jumped into the ocean to save his kid, but also his kid got swept into the ocean in the first place because they should not have been there. And to that point, you had people like Pirate Cheese saying, I'd rather have a dumb hero than an evil genius any day. Which I gotta say, I like that. Dumb hero or evil genius. Dumb hero feels like it's got golden retriever energy. Ryan Gosling-esque. Also, I gotta say, those comments were going off about that David Chang scandal. But honestly, most of the comments ranging from fuck David Chang to he doesn't seem like the best guy. People like War Eagle saying, to preface, I am a chef and have worked in the hospitality industry for over 10 years. Chang trademarking Chili Crunch is equivalent to Olive Garden trademarking Alfredo and going after small Italian restaurants in your hometown. Or if Taco Bell tried to trademark quesadilla and went after the food truck that has a mile-long line in downtown LA. Being able to corner the market on a product like a Chili Crunch would 100% stifle innovation because it would only allow one product to exist. It's absolutely insane how this was allowed to go through. With Uber stuff responding, it's pure trademark bullying. And Randy Newman adding, it's David Chang. It's the most in-character thing for him to do. He can go lick a microwave. Also, we had folks like Tay998 saying, the fact that David Chang is trying to trademark Chili Crunch is ridiculous. It's also a bit ironic given the fact that the company he owns is using a Japanese name and owned by a Korean American trying to trademark a Chinese condiment. It is baffling and perplexing to say the least. least as a chef myself. And then finally, I have to read this comment because I gotta calm you down. That Harbinger sound saying, am I not your beautiful bastard anymore, Phil? What? I just didn't say it yesterday. I gotta keep you guys on your toes. Because sometimes when I'm saying the same thing for like the 712th time, I get this random itch to jump off of something high. And as Saturnalia said, he'll bring it back. He always does. And Larry Scar saying, he said it with his eyes. Though joking aside, I need you to understand that most of the differences and changes, they are not in thought out things. I saw a tweet the other day that was like, this is the most Philip DeFranco thing ever for him to bring back the old monkey intro and then just take it away and not address it. There's often no rhyme or reason, except when there 100% is. You know, like the organized, structured, messy ball of chaos that I am. But that is actually where today's show is gonna end. As always, thank you for being a part of my daily dives into the news, and do not worry, I'll be back to inform and distract soon, because my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow. You on my mind a lot. Don't need no time watch. I don't know how I got you in my pocket spot. Yeah, that's bae. Meet you every day. You light my oxygen.